Hello and welcome to the Geekery Podcast. I'm Jeremy Pappas, alongside, as always, the doom that came to Russell Jones. Russell,
I am my own doom. That's actually pretty accurate. Yeah. Most days.
That's going to be written on your tombstone.
He was his own doom.
He was his own doom.
Doom-driven, if you will.
How are you, my friend?
So far, so good, minus some frustrations on the game reviewing front. I'm working on a review for the newest expansion for Victoria 2. And if you've never played Victoria 2, I would suggest that you find a way to run your hand through a wood chipper while someone is explaining to you the macroeconomics of medieval Europe.
Perhaps go to Lowe's with your medieval Europe history, European history professor.
Right. Just it's blah. I'm gonna get there. I'm gonna make that finish line, by God, but I cannot for the life of me understand why people would enjoy that kind of game unless they also prefer being flogged on a daily basis.
You have self-flagellates. Victoria 2 is a great game!
Tighten that, Selyse, yeah.
Well, we can get into that later, but as I mentioned or alluded to at the beginning of the podcast, last week we talked about Keith Baker and Lee Moyer's game, The Doom That Came to Atlantic City. Now, the reason we were talking about it last week was that it was not really going to happen. They had done a Kickstarter, and it didn't really work out all that well. Either some shady dealings or just some stupidity. But it turns out a company, a very smart company,
yeah,
by the name of Cryptozoic. Cryptozoic is, of course, they do the Lord of the Rings card games. They do
there's a DC Comics deck building game. I think they're primarily known. They do the World of Warcraft card game.
They do the World of Warcraft trading card game. They also produce
the very bottom because it starts with the W.
They also produce the Walking Dead board game, Lock and Key the game, all the Penny Arcade games, and a ton of other specifically like movie and television IP kind of games. They also remake a lot of video games into. Anyway, they've stepped in and said, "You know what? We're going to make this happen. We're going to license this with Lee and Keith. We're going to put it all together since all this work has been done, and this is a really this is going to work out hopefully for the better for people that that kind of got screwed over in the Kickstarter."
Yeah. And the thing is, they are going to go ahead and send the board game to the backers of the mm-hmm. Kickstarter free mm-hmm. of charge, even though, and Keith is very specific about this on his website, they have no responsibility. They're not assuming any responsibility. They're doing nothing that is related to Kickstarter. This is a completely separate thing. They just stepped up and said, "Hey, this is a bum deal. We are going to honor your backers and get them the game, you know, because we want to."
Yeah.
And because it's really, really, really smart.
Yeah, it is. I mean, when it comes to companies that make games and stuff like this, man, it is so important, so epically important that your audience likes you as a company. I mean, think of how many people buy games just because Richard Garfield's name's on the front of them. Of it.
Right.
Tons.
Or Richard Garriott. Or
right. I mean, that was the big reason we started talking about this to begin with, was because Keith Baker's name is attached to it, and we're both big Eberron heads. Now, to have Cryptozoic step in and say, "You know what, we're going to take a little bit of a hit to the bottom line to step in and be the knight in shining armor for this game." And for all of the people that have put their money in and to honor that, I mean, they could have just stepped in and said, "Hey, we'll produce the game." They could have gone that far and they would have been, and it would have been a good thing. Stepping in and honoring the Kickstarter obligations that they have no reason to honor, that's crazy. And crazy awesome for Cryptozoic to do so.
and is going to eventually make them a lot of money based off of fan goodwill.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you're going to have... I can almost guarantee you this. All of the people that get the Doom to Atlantic City, the board
Doom
game.
Doom came to Atlantic City.
Right. I'm just going to call it Atlantic City. All of the people that get the Atlantic City board game that put through the Kickstarter, I can almost guarantee you the next time they're at their game store, they'll take at least a second, third, fourth, and fifth look at a Cryptozoic game.
Yep.
And they'll say, hey, that Lord of the Rings deck building game looks interesting. They already, you know, they are, you know, help me out anyway, so, yeah, and they're going to get it. At the end of the day, Cryptozoic is going to make money from this, and they're making it honestly. It's not some marketing ploy, it's not, no, it's just straight up goodwill and just being a stand-up company. That's pretty awesome.
And you can't buy the goodwill that
You can't buy the goodwill. You can't buy the publicity of the goodwill. Because Keith and Lee have direct contact with their fans, who should, at this point, anyone who knew that this was happening to Atlantic City to begin with, they all know now that it's going to be picked up by Cryptozoic. Mm-hmm. And that they're doing this great thing, and everyone is really complimentary of Cryptozoic. So, I mean, it's good move on Cryptozoic's part. Way to just be decent cats. I mean, that's really the bottom line. Way to just be decent people, and fix a problem you have absolutely no reason to fix.
Yep,
it's pretty good. So look for the Doom that came to Atlantic City in a game shop near you at some point in time in the near future. And if you are one of their Kickstarter backers, look for it in the mail, because the news of its death had been greatly exaggerated.
Yeah. They're also going to be able to provide, and I think that some backers might have already gotten them, mm-hmm. the print and play download instructions, which were part of the whole right. project and thing to begin with.
Right. So, and that's not the only news in the Keith Baker world at the moment. He is, we're about 2 weeks from Gen Con. We'll probably do a big Gen Con preview next week. If not a little bit this week, we have a couple of things that we've gone through that look really interesting that we may not be able to not get into. But over on KeithBaker.com, he's talking about an expansion to the card game Gloom. Now, Russell has Gloom, and the last time we got together in physical in person, we played Gloom, and it was a great deal of fun. Expansion for it. Gloom is a transparent card game, and you're a family, and you're trying to make your family as upset as possible. You're trying to make as many bad things happen to your family as possible, and then kill them off.
In really horrible ways.
Right.
Because and it's interesting that we go from Doom to Gloom. Mm-hmm. But Gloom has a variety of a couple different expansions that are out now, such as they give you additional families so that more people can play the game because each player controls a single family. They introduce some additional mechanics like uninvited guests. Mm-hmm. The new expansion is called The Unquiet Dead, and it sounds really fascinating because mm-hmm. it's going to add in the ability to turn some of your characters of your family into monsters. So you could potentially wake up as a were-duck, which is just terrifying.
That's the thing that I think scares me the most. I go to bed, I think, am I going to get blown up by a drone, or am I going to wake up as a were-duck?
Because you never pick up a duck in a dungeon.
No, and if it's a were-duck, that's even worse. Somehow that's even worse.
The interesting thing about the mechanics, you have what are called the undead, which are cards that change the central character that you apply them to. Mm-hmm. So they actually replace that image, you know, the character portrait on the card mm-hmm. with something relevant to the were-duck. And Keith's got a picture of the unquiet were-duck up on his mm-hmm. up on a site that's actually really, really cool looking and you know, squamous and terrifying. Mm-hmm. And it gives you additional story modifiers. So if you play Gloom, you know that there are certain cards that give you additional modifiers like beast or money or, in this mm-hmm. case, duck. Mm-hmm. And those story modifiers can give you big bonuses, penalties, as it were,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you want a really low score,
mm-hmm.
To various types of cards that are played on them. So if you play a certain untimely death on a card that's got a specific modifier, you get additional points because right. you stayed thematic to the story and you were right. able to match those up.
Which is cool. Now, the cool thing about the undead modifier is that when your character becomes undead, it counts as being dead, but it still does stuff. So your opponents can make it happier and give you positive points, which you don't want, or you can continue making it worse. And so it adds sort of a new dimension to the game, whereas before your goal was to get your character as low a score as possible and then give them the axe. This way, you kind of create a constant dump that you can continue to make more, you know, unhappy, and your opponents can target to make happier, to really give you that sort of variation up until the very end when you're finally able to kill your last character. Once yeah. all of your characters are dead or undead, then the game is over. So I think it adds the undead modifier, depending on how... I'm assuming since it's called the Unquiet Dead that it'll be a big part of this expansion. It gives you a little more suspense up until the very last, because you've played the game where the person jumps out ahead and he's so far ahead there's no way that you're going to be able to catch up with him, and that can happen in Gloom. This will actually, I think, give a little bit of relief to that whole thing. It'll really let you
yeah
play like until the last card, basically.
Like in a multiplayer game, something we run into is one person will kill off all but one member of their family,
uh-huh.
and then the other three players in the game will just pour their modifiers that they whatever they can onto that last right. character to make sure they can't kill them.
Right.
And so it can kind of stretch the game out a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So this does provide, you know, a little extra. It makes it a more target-rich environment, which I think is interesting.
Oh yeah, it's interesting. It's a good addition of mechanic to the game. It doesn't, to me, it makes a lot of sense. It doesn't seem like just, you know, something that you would add, kind of like the fifth or sixth expansion for Carcassonne, where they were adding in princesses and fairies, and it just, and I haven't, it may be awesome, but to me, it has always seemed like, maybe we pull it back, which is why I only have the two expansions for Carcassonne. We played Carcassonne when you and Macy were here, didn't we?
Yeah, we got a chance. I can't remember who won. I think it may have been Macy.
I think it was Macy.
I remember there were some pretty big cities that came out.
Yeah. Carcassonne's a great game. If you've never picked it up, you should. It's an older German style board game, that you would dig, but there's literally nothing new with it. It came out in like 99, but it's a good game. You should pick it up.
Yeah,
it's
a lot. And now that we're kind of on the topic, I should also mention last night we pulled out Lords of Waterdeep again.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, and their expansion is also coming up.
Uh-huh.
Scoundrels of Skullport, which mm-hmm. they were actually, if I remember correctly, they were planning two expansions, and yep, Undermountain and Skullport,
mm-hmm.
and they rolled them into the same box.
Which, coming from Wizards, is, I would say, I don't like to pile on Wizards, but I would say that's unusual, because they don't necessarily make it a point to give you fewer things to buy. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily say, oh, you know, let's just wrap all this together in one thing, that way they only have to buy the one thing.
Yeah. And so that's going to be coming out on August 20th.
And if you're going to Gen Con, this is one of the things that we were talking about potentially going over, was Wizards has their Gen Con schedule up on their website. They're doing a Lords of Waterdeep featuring Scoundrels of Skullport game, or a D&D play at Gen Con that you'll be able to go do. So yeah. That's pretty cool.
I'll say this, I won our Lords of Waterdeep game last night because uh-huh. I managed to get the Hidden Lord, the Masked Lord, which is the courtesan that gives you points for every building that you have.
Uh-huh.
And, oh, she's un godly powerful.
Mm.
Because I actually ran into this when we were playing, when I played this with a group of people at a local shop. Someone had her, and everyone else had normal lords. And we got to the end of the game, and this guy was, like, in last place and on the scoreboard to start off with and didn't really have a lot of stuff in his tavern. But getting 6 points for every building that he had, and he had almost, like, he had 8 out of the 10 spots. And he just passed us.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, it was insane.
That's another game we played when you were down here.
Yep.
That's right, because...
I think we bought it while we were down there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you won Gloom, Macy won Carcassonne, and I won Lords of Waterdeep, if memory serves me correctly. Which is a good night of gaming. When everyone wins a game, when everyone but Russell wins a game,
If you ever watch Tabletop, and you see how, oh, everyone decides they want to beat Will because he's the one who knows all the games. Right. He's the target, right? And he's won, like, less than 10% of all the games that have been on Tabletop. That's kind of how my life is.
You're good. You win a lot, though.
Yeah.
So you do tend to win a lot, except for Risk, because I am a demon of Risk.
Yeah, I will admit right off the bat that my Risk strategy is pretty simple and straightforward and easily
and
beatable.
And not good, yeah. I am a demon of Risk. We also played a whole lot of Monopoly, which were good times. Usually came down to Macy and I destroying Russell and then battling it out at the end.
It was what Macy Core?
Yeah, Macy Core and Pappas Industries. Yeah, that's
basically
right.
Basically just taking Jones LLC out to the woodshed.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, Russell also has a knack for really screwing you over at the worst possible time. And this, I think, Russell, is your biggest issue. You tend to screw everyone over at the table, like, individually. So it's like you launch nukes at individual countries, and then you just sit back and those countries rally against you. So
it's not so much that I've launched the nuke at the individual country. I launched the nuke at the individual country that's the breadbasket to feed all the other players.
Right. And then everyone's
everyone's just like, one of them is like, why did you do that to me? And the rest are like, okay, that's just dickish. I'm sorry. That's pissing me off. Have you seen Monsters of Tokyo?
Yeah. They have the expansion coming out for that too, don't they?
Right. I played that. This is a perfect example. I played that for the first time at a local shop, and everyone was playing a very conservative. No one wanted to get into Tokyo, and they were just collecting points. And after like the second or third turn, I'd picked up a power card that let me launch a like Giga Breath or something like that at everyone on the table. Mm-hmm. So I jumped into Tokyo, dealt like 6 damage to everyone, and then dropped that fire breath at the same time. So I took everyone from like full health on their monsters to like a third of their health left.
And then everyone beats the shit out of you.
Yeah, they're all sitting here like, wow, I don't think I've ever seen a game where someone won by killing off all the rest of the monsters. I'm like, really? I thought that would be the point. And they proceeded to absolutely murder me.
Yeah, well, yeah, King of Tokyo is a Richard Garfield game.
Yeah, it's fun.
It is fun.
It's a little... You look at the rules and you think there's no way. That doesn't seem like it would work from a balance or a mechanics or whatever, but it really does.
Yeah, it does.
And it feels really good, especially once you've played a game or two.
Mm-hmm. It's a fun game. I think they've done that on Tabletop before, haven't they?
Yes, they have. That was with... they all had beards, and so they had a beard off to start the game.
Yeah,
so,
I can't remember.
The Tabletop episode that should be coming up this weekend is actually the one I've been looking forward to the most, which is the one where they play the Star Wars X-Wing miniatures game.
I didn't realize that was this weekend.
Yeah, I think maybe Seth Green, maybe Chloe Dykstra were involved in that, but that was one they shot it like way early back, and then I don't know what happened, but they had to delay the episode all the way to the end of the season. For some reason, like someone may have said something and they edited the thing together and they realized that they weren't supposed to say it because of certain
NDA issues or something along those lines.
So they had to delay it until it was out. I don't know. That was just kind of a rumor that I'd heard of. But either way, it's going to be interesting.
That's a fantasy. That's a Fantasy Flight game.
Yep, Fantasy Flight Games.
That I've considered picking up.
That I bought quite a bit of, and have played a couple of times, but have, because I've kind of stopped going to the local gaming shops every week because I've been trying to focus on other stuff at home, other projects I've got going on. I haven't really had time to play it that much, and I haven't been able to find people in Baton Rouge to play with. Most of them wind up playing in New Orleans because that's where they can actually... Plus One Gaming in New Orleans actually does regional tournaments for it. It's kind of like that issue you run into with Magic, where it's like, oh, I want to play Magic locally, but there's like maybe two people, and they're both kind of assholes, and I don't really want to, I don't really want to play with them, and I don't want to play with, you know, my best friend slash significant other because, you know, we do that all the time.
Right.
I kind of want to, and the only other place to play is like, you have to pay $50 and enter this massive regional tournament with no hopes of winning if you just want to play your game.
Right.
You can't just go to a shop and find 10 other people playing pickup games. You can now because Friday Night Magic and all the other, you know, store stuff that they've got going on have made it really, have really incentivized that. But other games, you know, I'm still running into issues of trying to find people who actually buy this thing to play it.
Yeah, I mean, if you live outside of a large city, and for those of you who live in a large city, you might not even be aware of this, but you, if you live outside of a large city, it can be really difficult to find people to play with. If those people don't have the same interests that you do, I mean, we don't really have a game shop where I live. There's sort of one, but it's never really been any good. As far as, you know, holding events and, you know, becoming... It's a place where you can go buy games, but it's not a place necessarily that is great for going and playing games. So, you know, it's something that if and when I end up in a larger city, it's definitely something I'll be getting into. Because yeah, it'd be nice to just go and play a game and have a regular game, for God's sake.
And part of the problem with that can be... I think I've talked about this before. You see the shops that are either run by gamers or they're run by business people. A gamer-run shop tends to not, you know, it might be for certain demographics and people. Like when I was in college, I went to a place called Black Bart's in Dardanelle that he actually moved from Russellville to Dardanelle, and both of the places were kind of run down and not really – you wouldn't consider them like a store.
Right.
It was like the bombed out warehouse that ravers tend to go to, you know. He had a bunch of products that he would sell, but there was wiring coming out of the walls and ceiling was falling in, and there was like a bunch of beanbags thrown around around a TV where people would play Halo, and you know, you'd bring your computer in and set up and do LAN, and you'd hold like 14 player Magic games, and it was cool if you were a college kid.
Yeah, or younger. You know,
yeah. But it was also kind of a skeezy scene. So,
yeah.
Not exactly the kind of thing that 30-year-old me wants to go out and find. Like, I'd like to go to a place that has air conditioning and has lights and has a regular schedule that people keep.
Air conditioning, lights, and a schedule. Look at you.
What can I say? I have grown soft in my old advanced.
Look at you. Oh, air conditioning. You're adorable.
Yeah.
It can be difficult to find places to go and play. I mean, for the longest time, I can't tell you how many years I went without a regular game until we started our Edge of the Empire game via Google Hangout, which works really well, like gangbusters now. So I'm greatly happy to have that back on the table. But, you know, you kind of get to a point where, you know, what's the site? Go to meetup.com and blah, blah.
Absolutely. Meetup is the biggest, it was the biggest benefit for me down here of finding people to actually board game with. Because they're, you know, it's easy to organize. People that, like the guy who owns the store in Prairieville, Gamers Paradise, actually organizes a board game night on Meetup so people know when it's happening. Even if, you know, he's not, like, quote-unquote active in the board gaming group, he at least says, hey, here's an opportunity in a venue, which is great.
Right, right. And which then, is what you should do.
Like, I met my part of a 4th edition D&D group. At one of the board game nights. So even if I'm not going to the board game, you know, night, I've at least got some other benefit coming out of it. So it's, I highly, highly recommend meetup.com for finding, you know, gamers in your area. And if you can't find any, start a board, because there's probably a bunch of people looking for the same thing that you
want. Yeah, it's that everyone's sort of waiting for somebody else to do the work. If you want to get something together, just get something together.
It is the match.com of lonely board gamers, but not really. Not in that sense.
Not really. Don't use meetup.com for that. That's wrong.
If you do, you deserve the face full of mace that you get.
That's wrong. Don't do that. So since we've kind of drifted sort of toward Gen Con news, something that I'm sure we'll hear a lot about as we get closer into Gen Con and as it sort of takes over, will be a lot of MMO news. Now, one thing that has been sort of the grand topic of MMO players as far as new MMOs are concerned after KOTOR came out, or Old Republic, TOR, blah, 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 blah. After TOR came out.
So many acronyms.
Yeah, thank you, Star Wars. After Old Republic came out, has been Blizzard's big, super top secret, maybe an MMO. They didn't even want to call it an MMO because it's that groundbreaking project known only as Titan.
Yep.
And it would be spoken with hallowed and reverent terms. Things aren't looking so good for Titan.
Well, things have not looked good for Titan, I would argue, ever.
Yeah, that's true. Let's say this. There has been some really, if you've already gotten your Titan tattoo, not
good luck figuring out what to tattoo first.
Right. Probably, yeah. Not looking great for Titan. We've been talking about Titan. I know Titan has been around for at least 5 years.
Oh yeah,
they've been talking about it for at least 5 years, and people have been speculating about Titan for at least 5 years. Well, there's been news recently that Titan has had to go to the ground floor, which basically means the last however long they've been talking about it in public and before was pretty much all wasted.
Yeah, they've basically taken their development cycle all the way to the frame, to the ground framework, and started over.
Right.
There was also on an Activision, like the only detail that I think we even have about this game came from an Activision Blizzard conference call this week, an earnings call, where they were talking about Titan, kind of doing the restart, and saying that it's unlikely going to be a subscription MMO, which is about the only new detail. If you could point to anything, you could say, oh, it's supposed to be a next-gen MMO, and now it's not likely to have a subscription.
Right, which is not surprising. You don't see people really coming out with subscription MMOs as often here lately. It's all been free-to-play and free-to-play plus and whatever else you want to call games that make you pay for individual things as opposed to paying for playtime.
Like freemium or
freemium. Free-to-play. Yeah.
You know what's even crazier? Is that, honestly, I think WoW is going to go free-to-play before Titan comes out.
Well, the thing is, you might be right, but for an entirely different reason, because if you occasionally on Reddit, somebody will do an AMA that says, I was a Blizzard employee, or I was a blah, blah, blah game manager, I did this, ask me anything. I want to say the last two or three of those that I saw, there was some hint that Titan was never going to happen. That they pulled everyone off of it to work on other projects. Titan had been lingering around for too long, and it just was never going to happen, so they only have a few people that are still kind of kicking the idea around over lunch, but overall it was not looking good for Titan, which, to the credit of the people who have been sort of leaking this information, a lot of them were really complimentary of what they had seen. They thought it seemed really cool, but it just didn't work out. So, I mean, and what we're seeing now basically confirm that says Titan it has been taken, has basically been, the carpet's been pulled up and we're starting over from bare floor. That lends a lot of credence to that, because you don't take something that's been in development for, I'm going to say 5 years. It's likely longer, so we'll be really liberal about that and say 5 years. You don't take that to the ground floor and have it ever come out again. I mean, if you have, there comes a time where you're at the point of no return, and it's, we've sunk so much into this that it's either coming out or we're going to cut our losses.
Yeah.
And 5 years is way fucking past that point. I mean, 5 years is like, it should be coming out tomorrow. A 5-year development is, I mean, jeez, just, yeah.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be shocked to never see Titan, which is kind of a shame. I mean, and you've also seen some Blizzard properties not do as well as they had hoped here recently. So, you know, I think it makes a lot of sense, since Blizzard has slowly becoming decentralized, that they would have to pull the plug on their grand adventure game or whatever the fuck it was going to be.
Yeah, whatever, also, whatever the next evolutionary step past WoW.
There have also been a lot of people saying that it looks a lot like the game that's coming out. Shit, what's the name of it?
What, WildStar?
No. The console game that's coming out. The big console game that's coming out that I can't remember. Destiny!
You're describing.
Destiny! Oh, yeah, it's going to be a lot like Destiny. I've heard some people say that it was going to be, that it was essentially going to be Destiny, but the Destiny guys beat them to it. So they're like, meh. Which would also lead credence to the fact that they're starting, that they're quote unquote starting over. By starting over, I mean they're taking Titan to a farm where it can play with other next gen MMOs.
Nah, to the farm.
Don't even get me started. I was crying laughing. Crying, laughing. I was.
Let me tell the story. It's gonna take 5 minutes.
Go ahead.
So we're playing Edge of the Empire, and Jeremy's character is a big bruiser, a race called the Hauk, and they have this Rodian slicer that they're interrogating, and she's just absolutely, you know, fish out of water, wrong person, wrong place, wrong time. She's just crying because of how scared she is, and the rest of the group. They're kind of browbeating her a bit. They get with the
information. Well, they're not browbeating her. We have a
captain. Well, it kind of goes back and forth. Some of you guys are threatening to eat her. Yeah, the rest are trying to say, now look, we're going to let you go once we get what we need. Just tell us what you know. You know, it's like good cop, cannibal cop. And they finally get done with her, and your character finally...
I can't believe this even worked.
I know, is going to be the one to
yeah, I basically chime in there. We're trying to decide what to do with her. I basically chime in and go, oh, I'll take care of her. I'll take her wherever she needs to go. And the group just sort of agrees with me. And I'm kind of, and I just start dying laughing. Because obviously what's going to happen is this NPC has to die. Now, she wasn't innocent in this whole thing we were investigating. So I don't, and we're kind of scoundrelly types. So
which is the point of Edge of the Empire. It's supposed to be great.
Right. So when I say, I was sort of half kidding, like, of course you're not going to give her to me to let me take care of. So they say, so I say, oh, I'll take care of her. I'll take her wherever she needs to go. And everyone's like, oh, okay. I go, okay, well, I didn't anticipate that working. So, I take her to a farm.
The farm.
I take her to a farm where she can run and play and be with other Rodians.
And because we're on video chat, he starts dying laughing.
I'm fucking
another
crying.
Character
I can't
in the group
believe
loses it.
I just think about the whole thing where they're like, I don't know what we should do with them. They spend an hour figuring out what they're gonna do, and the guy who's literally been sitting in the back, like pointing at her and pointing at his mouth, like, I'm going to eat you, goes, oh, well, I'll take her somewhere. And everyone's like, okay, that seems logical. It's like, what the okay, well, I'm gonna pick her up. I'm gonna literally take her out the door, shut the door, break her in half, throw her the garbage can, shut the lid, and come back. Well, that didn't take long. Yeah, she just wanted to go down the street. She's fine to, you know, live and play, and she's gonna live a long, healthy life. It was
and enjoy, like, Titan in the process.
Exactly.
I put she's her in the garbage go to the next farm to where she and other Rodian slicers are playing Titan.
Oh, I really, I really hate telling insufferable tabletop stories, but sometimes you just can't help it. And I've told that story now 6 times to people. It's just, I did not expect them to just go, okay, that sounds good. Like, I'm being so transparent here.
So we're saying is that Titan is, you know, is as alive as that Rodian
is. Yeah.
And the other part of what I was saying earlier about WoW going free to play, honestly, I think that that's not just likely going to happen, not just inevitable for WoW. I think it's imminent because they're testing on the public test realm right now an in-game store that you will be able to purchase things off of. So you can just pop up your Battle.net account in the middle of the game and buy stuff.
And the reason behind that, and the reason behind that is pretty simple. WoW, you know, a lot of people say, well, WoW has this great, this huge population of people that play it, which is why they're on top. Well, WoW's population is in flux. New people start and old people leave.
Oh yeah.
All the time. I mean,
it varies like the stock
market. Right. So they need to make sure that they're still, as counterintuitive as it seems, they need to make sure that they're still attractive to new players. And we're seeing more and more that new players are more reticent to start a game that has a subscription model when there are so many other games out there that you can literally download right now and start playing and get a lot of play out of right now. So, yeah. I mean, it only makes sense for WoW to remain solvent to do that, to go or to have a free-to-play model. Now, I'm almost positive that eventually they're going to say, hey, they'll never get past that $15 a month thing, and that'll be the thing that they push the most.
Yeah. And here's how I see it happening. Eventually, you're going to see a little similar to what you're seeing in the Old Republic. You can log into WoW. You can play your character. You can do stuff with a guild.
Mm-hmm.
You can go fishing. You can do daily quests. And you can, you know, maybe run a dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't raid.
Right.
You can't do the absolute maximum of content that there is available. Mm-hmm. Like, you might be able to do 10 daily quests. Or even 5 daily quests.
Right.
You know, you get a soft cap, and then you can increase that cap.
I've heard people throwing around the idea that you get up to a certain level for free, and you can do whatever you want to do up to, you know, level 40, level 50, and beyond that,
yeah,
you have to pay to gain experience.
The only problem is that if you buy expansions, which the game kind of comes with a lot of expansions right now, you're paying for that content. And you can't access that content unless you're a certain level, unless they, you know, smooth out the leveling curve so that certain expansions, you know, fit within whatever that X number of levels is. Like, they may cut it off before whatever the current expansion is, like in this case, Pandaria, or whatever the next expansion is going to be. Which we're getting to the point now, because they're in, like, the third round of raids and patches and, you know, that part of the cycle, that we should probably start hearing about WoW's next expansion coming up here pretty soon, like at BlizzCon. So it seems like with the advent of a cash shop in the game that is primarily for cosmetics, but they have items that give boosts that have been seen in the game code, you know, it seems like those little cracks in the wall are starting to form. And eventually, you're going to see them come along and say, the core WoW experience plus a little extra, $15 a month. A little less than the core experience, free. Like, if I was allowed to log into WoW and go fishing, do a couple quests, do some crafting, and chat with my guildmates, I would probably still be playing WoW.
Yeah, I'd pop on occasionally.
I stopped because I was not playing it that often, and $15 a month for once or twice, maybe every other week, just was not, you know, it just didn't make any sense.
It's just not worth it.
Right. I felt like I had to log into play to make the $15 work. Instead, what I could get is the ability to play for free, and then, hey, there's a new raid that's coming out. I want to play in that raid. I'm going to plunk down $5 and buy, you know, raid passes. Or
even plunk down your $15 and raid for a month.
1 month. For 1 month.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that the overall market is getting used to that level of service. Not the level of service, you know, where everything's got a dollar sign attached to it that you get in the game. You know, they're really making the line drawn on what they are willing to play and what they're willing to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Neverwinter is the newest free-to-play MMO right now, and they've got 2 million people playing it right now. And they're another freemium kind of model. Mm-hmm. It's the Cryptic model, which is very similar to Star Trek Online. And Star Trek Online ain't doing too bad either. So, you know, the more of these that have been coming out and the more refined that formula is getting, different player bases are kind of seeing getting used to it. And the other thing is that a free-to-play model would help World of Warcraft with their flux population.
Because they've created a population that no other game has. They've created a population of people that used to play WoW.
And they also have that core 5 million whatever that are just going to reflexively pay that $15 a month to play because that's their thing. Mm-hmm. They're in for the long haul and they're going to keep playing. If you gave them the lifetime option, they'd buy it because they know, you know, I have spent a very, very large sum of money I don't even think about on that game. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind paying you, you know, a little big chunk early and just not having to pay it again. Mm-hmm. But at this point, they're paying the $15 a month and they've got that $15. You know, that's figured out. They eat one less lunch out a month, maybe, and that's how they pay for WoW. Right. Whatever they do, it's in there, and they've forgotten about it because it's that ingrained into their budget. So they're not going to change unless something absolutely screwed up happens. Mm-hmm. If Blizzard does it wrong, which is probably the reason why you have
which, and occasionally Blizzard does it wrong, which is why they have the flux. Yeah. They lose certain people. Or they do it wrong in the eyes of certain people. Wrong is very relative in this sense.
But if they do the free-to-play transition right, then they're going to keep that core 5 to 6 million that have always been paying the subscription. They might pick up a little and go to, like, you know, 7 million or so subscription people, depending on subscribers, depending on, you know, what kind of features they offer you, especially if they give you incentives and bonuses, kind of the way that the older public does. And then they'll have that free fluxing population that just have their account but don't always log in. They're not raiding. They're not doing certain things.
Right.
You know, they're just in to occasionally pop in and play and talk to their peeps and, you know, do some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're not a regular, consistent player, and they will occasionally spend money or frequently spend money on a cosmetic pet, on a mount, on something else, you know.
On a month or they'll throw $15 in for a month or two to do something with a friend, help a friend level, you know, get to a point where, you know, they can do something like if, say if they were to do this and I was
right. XP so that they can get up to the top level as fast as they can.
Right.
Because WoW already has XP boosts in the game and there are significant XP boosts. Mm-hmm. I mean, resting valued is one, but the other is if you refer a friend,
which is how I started playing.
Exactly. And they're perfectly fine with you paying for a second account to do this. They're like, oh, we know that you don't actually bring anyone new into the game. We don't mind taking your extra $15. You get 300% experience boost all the way up to level 60. That exists now and is being used. So if people see a 25% XP boost and immediately throw their hands up, you're missing the point.
Yeah.
Which is why I don't think that they're going to have that big of a resistance when they eventually flip the switch. Is because the part of the population knows it's coming. They're seeing that it's going to be coming, and they don't begrudge them it. They've paid $15 a month. Mm-hmm. They are that population of, you know, I used to play WoW. They're like me. And whenever it comes around, if they do it right, if they have that, you know, if they hit that right blend of options, they're going to see a big pickup in numbers. And I think that a new expansion is the perfect time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Considering that they've historically gone 4 major patch cycles and then an expansion. We're going into the 3rd major patch now. They have quite a bit of time to announce the next expansion, and then when that expansion hits, flip the switch.
You know, it's all part of the encasualing of MMOs. Which happens, I mean, it happens across the board. Look at the development of the personal computer.
Yeah.
The personal computer started off not user-friendly. As time has gone on, now your grandmother has one. It's the same thing with MMOs. Vanilla WoW was a fucking Bataan death march compared to what you have now. And they very slowly pushed forward, and it's gotten more and more casual. Look at I mean, it happens to literally everything that becomes big business. Look at consoles. You started off with games that were intended to be difficult because they wanted to give the small audience of people buying them enough of an incentive to buy the game. They wanted it to last for a long time. Now you have the Wii, which again your grandmother buys, and it has games. People consistently complain about how no games are difficult anymore, and it's all push a button and quick time events and blah blah blah. Everything happens like this. It's the same thing with MMOs. They've gotten more casual, and to the point where actually paying a subscription for the game is considered hardcore.
And here's the thing about that. The whole, you know, games aren't hard anymore. Mm-hmm. The other reason why so many of those early games were hard is because they were actually intended to be played at an arcade. And when you play them at an arcade, you have to pay a quarter every time that you want to continue.
Right.
And the reason why games in arcades were so freaking hard was so they could pump you for quarter mm-hmm. after quarter mm-hmm. after quarter. I mean, when you sit down and actually look at what you have to do to beat Pac-Man all the way through, mm-hmm. when you get to the final level and you have the two mazes next to each other and one of them is entirely glitched out so that you have to have memorized what the route is, mm-hmm. so you can't actually see what you're doing. There's no way you're supposed to be able to just show up and beat that. No. Then you have to be able... You have to pay and pay and pay to eventually learn, and the whole time, they're making money quarter after quarter after quarter. The reason why hardcore gaming is a thing today is because old gaming companies wanted to make as much money as possible off of gamers, mm-hmm. and those gamers have now grown up with the nostalgia of difficult, mm-hmm. hardcore games. And the reason why they have that nostalgia is the same reason that they're complaining about companies being casual today to make more money.
Right, because you no longer have the arcade is no longer a thing.
It's not as viable a thing anymore.
No, it's not. And I mean, you even look back when you got your first consoles, you had to, as a company, you had to attract people to buy your console, which cost quite a bit of money. Now, so you wanted to give them a lot to do with the console. Back in the time when graphics weren't a thing, you didn't buy a game because it looked pretty. You bought a game because it gave you something to do. That's why a lot of your console, and of course there are also a lot of arcade ports at that point too, so you're still getting your tough-ass arcade games, but even the games that were specifically for the home console, they made those, A, so you could play them for quite a while, and B, because they'd turn around and port them to the arcade and they'd have the exact same deal. It's, video games have become a completely different thing now, so now you're looking for, it's more inclusion, it's more about getting this wide mass appeal, which is the encasualing of, it's
lowering the barrier to entry.
And it's looking, I mean, look at movies. Way back when movies were still sort of art house film projects, you didn't have a lot of salacious and you know, now we have what they had in the 70s with B movies and blaxploitation movies, except now we have graphic exploitation movies. It's the same sort of thing that happens everywhere. And WoW has to conform because it's either conform or be destroyed. And they do not want to lose their mantle as the MMO.
Unless Neverwinter absolutely blows up somehow, it's the only one that's even come close to the numbers mm-hmm. that WoW is really ever turned out. And I just don't see an MMO doing that unless something that was just announced this week turns out to be, you know, as amazingly wicked cool as they made it look
like. Yeah, so let's say something that not many people have said since the early 2000s, and let's talk about EverQuest, everybody.
Let's talk about EverQuest.
Yeah, so there's an article on Kotaku. Otaku. That's a that's a. Sorry, I was thinking Atiyug, which is a monster from D&D. From Kotaku, there are two new EverQuest games coming out here pretty soon. And they're EverQuest is a Sony online entertainment property. You have the one that's really interesting is EverQuest Next Landmark. Now there's EverQuest Next, which is a free to play sort of in the same genre as the regular EverQuest games. Then you have EverQuest Next Landmark, which is also free to play, but there's a big but here. It has a lot to do with content creation on the player end, land creation on the player end, and a lot of the tools will work in conjunction with, a lot of these creation tools will work in conjunction with EverQuest Next.
Yeah, it's being compared all over the internet as the Minecrafting of EverQuest, mm-hmm. where you basically have an entire, you know, a section of land that you've laid claim to, and you can build whatever you want to in that portion of land. You can adjust the terrain. You can dig into it if you want to. You can build castles or ruins or structures of all kinds. And it comes with a pretty robust set of tools from what we've seen. Mm-hmm. The thing that they're working with in this game is called voxels. They're, think a pixel, but instead of just a little sprite, it's actually a piece of terrain that is destructible. So you have all these different pieces that attach to each other, and whenever you hit it, it will blow up. So if you have a tree that's made entirely out of voxels, and an explosion happens next to that tree, or say a gigantic behemoth walks past the tree, instead of just passing the tree, it'll register as physics, and it'll break apart into all its little pieces. Some other things that they're talking about are monsters will, you know, whenever they blow things up, they'll leave craters. Players could knock over things in the environment. Mm-hmm. There's the possibility that an explosion will open up a hole in the ground to a procedurally generated dungeon or ruin that's been unearthed as a result of this. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have also been comparing the videos that have been seen and some of the different movements and things to Wildstar, which I think is a very similar... They've got similar art styles. EverQuest is a little more higher fantasy. Uh-huh. Wildstar is a little more kind of crazy, cartoony space quest.
Yeah, almost anime-y.
Yeah, a little bit. I think it's actually very similar. If you've played Evil Genius, there are a lot of little elements uh-huh. that are very similar to that. Like there are emotes that have got little cartoon or comics style word. You know, like ha 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 laugh that pops up over their head.
Right.
That kind of stuff. But EverQuest Next is going to be made almost entirely with these voxels, it seems like. And you'll be able to make stuff in Landmark that you then can transfer over or could be sold to players in EverQuest Next. The other interesting element of that is that not only could you sell things, you will also be able to retain the rights of the stuff that you sell. So an example given was, let's say you build a tower, like a wizard's tower, and you sell that. Then someone comes along and buys it, and they make a castle with that wizard's tower in it. When they sell the castle, the person that created the tower still maintains the rights to that tower and gets a cut of whatever they sell it for, which is really interesting and opens up a whole new set of economy. That you could potentially see. And it reminds me a lot of when players built houses and created a whole ton of stuff for Star Wars Galaxies.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very, you know, big sandboxy style game. And they've supposedly EverQuest Next is going to also be sandboxy as well. One of the other new things that they're adding with it is actually something similar to what you're seeing discussed for Pathfinder, the MMO.
Mm-hmm.
Rallying calls, which are kind of like big public events, but instead of just, oh, here's an event, you go to it, and it's done. Like a rallying call that they give an example of is a tent city, and you go to this tent city, and it's surrounded by goblins, and you drive the goblins off. You don't undertake a quest to kill 10 goblins, and then you try to complete that quest 50 times. You actually, like a big group of players, can try to drive off the goblins, and you kill the goblins, and eventually the goblins go away. And the tent city, without any, you know, predators, starts to thrive. And it could later become this actual city. So you create one character, and there's this tent city that's forming, and you helped drove it off, and your character, like, maxes out, and you roll a new character, and that new character comes along, and, oh, this tent city? It's now an actual thriving city, with actual stuff going on in it, with different stuff to do that you didn't have whenever you, you know, your character was going through. So it's an actual growing experience, which is kind of a thing that's almost the holy grail for a lot of MMOs, is to be able to have an actual living, breathing experience that grows from character to character to character, from iteration to iteration.
It is. It's kind of funny, and I've said this a lot of times, especially way back when we were talking a lot more about MMOs on the podcast. MMOs all strive to be like a tabletop role-playing game. If you started playing, on the tabletop before MMOs were a thing, you had an idea. Everyone had the same thought of, oh, wouldn't it be really cool if this were like a video game and you could do all this really cool stuff. Now, it's never gotten to that point, and it's never gotten anywhere near that point, but this is getting closer to it. Because in a tabletop game, you can do literally anything you want to do, and it's all what you want to do, and it's cool, and you enjoy it. The issue is, it's not a video game. It's a, you know, it's a game you play with your words and with your imagination. So this is sort of that next step. MMOs were sort of a step toward, it was, MMOs were a step forward in that process. Because really, all games that, really try to suck people into a story want to be like D&D. Want to be like you know, any of your other tabletop games. Because of how customizable they are. Because you, if you're looking to deliver the best player experience, tabletop games are so good at giving players what they want because they're player controlled. Players give themselves what they want. So this is sort of that next logical step. We have MMOs, which allow you to play with your other friends and create sort of a customized character. There are still rules, obviously, but sort of a customized character. Now you're getting to a point where you can start really genuinely affecting the story. Because say what you will about WoW, but you don't affect the story as a character. Not in any different way than anybody else affects the story.
No, I mean, the only thing that's similar to this that was like the opening of the Gates of Ankaraj, where everyone had to lend their effort to be this, you know, to put together this war effort to go to the Gates of Ankaraj. But it was always going to end the
same
way.
It was always going to end the same way, exactly.
It was just a different, it was just a matter of which server got there first.
Right, if you start talking about, you know, hey, you can go and when you do this thing, when you complete this, I'm going to say quest, but I don't mean like a yellow question mark quest. I mean like you complete this quest, it's actually going to do something. And in 6 months, when you're riding by and you go into the tent city and there's a blacksmith and there's a tavern and you're going to be able to look around and you go, you know what? This wouldn't be here unless I had done that thing I did forever ago.
Exactly.
You know, it's and that gives you something that right now MMOs will really highly covet. Now, I'm still skeptical on actually being able to provide that.
Yeah, that's all
intelligently
hype.
Exactly, because it, you always have to take hype down to like a fourth of what it's really going to be, maybe half if you get a company who really, really, really does well. But it's always going to have a couple of, well, you can do this and this and this and this and this. But
right, so how does that work if you have multiple servers, for instance? If you have like 10 servers and on 5 of the servers they drive the goblins back for this tent city, on 4 of the servers they just don't care and they go somewhere else, and then on 1 of the servers they try to drive the goblins back but there's not even enough people on the server to actually do so,
you know.
So as a result, you have scenarios across the 10 different servers that you're always having to keep up with.
Right, which leads me to believe that it'll almost be like switches, which is not what everyone wants. You either go and do this or you don't do this.
Yeah.
And either if you go and do it, then you flip the switch. If you don't go and do it, the switch remains unflipped, and whatever was going to happen was going to happen regardless. And yeah. eventually that thing falls apart, and that switch gets recycled, because that's how games work. And a month later, you'll have the same goblin horde at the same location, and either you decide to go and save it and turn it into the tent city, which becomes a slightly larger city, which is then raised by orcs, and it starts over... Or you let the goblins take over, it becomes a goblin fort, and eventually someone goes in and destroys it, and then a month later the goblins are back, and there's a tent city again. And it's really sort of the same thing, it's just repeated over a longer period of time.
Yeah.
Which is sort of the way I think it'll be handled, personally.
Yeah.
But we'll see. You never know. They could... The issue... The reason they don't do this, and we really need to close up the podcast, which we'll do in just a minute, but the reason they don't do this is because it requires people consistently working on something. It requires people to say, well, we want them to do this. Okay, well, let's code that instance or that whatever we want to call it and put it into the game. And it requires you to have a certain number of servers...
Yep.
Five or so, and having people working on, you know, having a team assigned to, you know, two servers each.
And even if they had the money and the wherewithal to have, say, 10 servers only, and 10 dedicated server teams that all work specifically to maintain the story and, you know, development for that server, then at some point or another, someone's going to come into a meeting and say, okay, Team A, how's your server doing? What's the status of Norrath A? They're like, well, you know, we have this city project went well. This city project is still in process right now. This city project is not getting paid a lot of attention to. We're thinking about doing some stuff to maybe draw some attention to it, kind of spread things out. And they're like, okay, cool. Norrath B, how are you guys doing? They just launched a rocket into space. Don't ask me how, but...
That's the way it happened.
Apparently the capital is now space control. Yeah, we don't know what happened either. What about Norrath C? Everyone's migrating off the server to go to Norrath B's server.
Yeah. No, because you can never, I mean, if you've ever DM'd, you can never anticipate what your players are going to want to do.
Nope.
Regardless, the best laid plans of mice and men, regardless what you want them to do, they're going to do something different. Yep. So, I mean, it's really, really interesting to think about. But at the same time,
I'm glad I'm not the person who's developing it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And who knows? One day maybe they'll figure out a way. I mean, because you see this, and I hate to bring everything back to Dwarf Fortress, but you see this in games like Dwarf Fortress, where there are complex algorithms and each individual thing likes its own thing, and the story sort of writes itself. I'll point you to the epic saga of Boat Murdered, if you'd like to see a story of crazed elephants and mandrels, and yeah, it's a fun read if you get the opportunity to. But that doesn't...
You also get that in EVE Online, where you know, player... That's like... the absolute, you know, it's called the sandbox for a reason. It's the absolute place where emergent gameplay and emergent stories happen, player-driven stuff. I mean, there are actual stories and things that are built into the game that you can progress through, but they matter less in the long run than what's actually going on between the corporations and between the different people in the sandbox every day.
Right, and EVE Online is not, it doesn't, it's not casual by any stretch of the imagination.
God, no. Heavens, no.
So they're bucking the trend of going casual, which everywhere is what everyone else is going for. So I hazard to say you won't see another EVE Online. But for those that have it and like it, it's pretty nice. But
get out there and get a supercomputer in it.
Yeah, then let's see what happens. But that's going to be all the time we have for today. If you want to respond or call us idiots, whatever you'd like to do, just shoot us an @ on Twitter. We are @ GIR Podcast. You can also shoot us an email. That's GIRpodcast@gmail.com. As always, our music is Op Prop featuring Esset. Check them out on uhort.no. For Russell, this is Jeremy. Thanks for listening.
EVE Online. Spreadsheets in space. Still less confusing than Victoria 2.